Hi and welcome to Matrix Moments. This is Saloni and in today's episode, we will be covering the journey of building Country Delight, India's leading direct-to-home mass premium dairy and fresh grocery brand. Joining us for this conversation are Chakradhar Gade and Nitin Kaushal, the co-founders of Country Delight, as well as Avnish Bajaj, founder and managing director at Matrix Partners India, and Sanjot Malhi, director and lead for the consumer and consumer tech investments at Matrix Partners India. Sanjot will also be moderating today's episode. Country Delight currently serves 200,000 families across Delhi, Mumbai, Pune, and Bangalore with a $50 million run rate along with a 3x year-on-year growth rate. This episode will essentially follow a masterclass-style format wherein we will go through the highlights and milestones of the journey with insights and inputs from both sides of the table, founders and investors. Tune in.
Great, guys. Thank you, Chakri and Nitin, and welcome to Matrix Moments. I know we've been talking about doing this for a while, but it's taken, a global pandemic for finally all of us to sit down and do it. But I'm glad and very, very excited to share the journey with everyone else as well. So let me start by saying, you know, I started tech investing a few years ago. And not even in my wildest dreams did I think one of the companies I'd be most excited about would be a company called Bijapur Dairy. but that's exactly the case. And not in my wildest dreams that I think I'd be traveling around the villages of Haryana, Rajasthan, and Maharashtra with you guys, learning about cows and yields and everything to do with milk and dairy. But it's been a real pleasure and a privilege, not only because, you know, it's been so much fun working with you guys, but also because I think what we're building is a truly unique company, not just in India, I think in the world, which is changing consumer habits and improving lives in many, many ways. Look, so let me step back for the viewers and talk a little bit very, very quickly about, you know, why we were excited coming in as a fund to make this investment. So we'd come up with an investment thesis a couple of years ago on tech-enabled businesses, D2C consumer brands. And, you know, what I thought was a fairly insightful thesis. You know, it had all the right things. It had deep markets, high return on capital, nonlinear growth, deep moats. So I think theoretically, as most theses go, it had all the right elements. But as we set out to make an investment behind that thesis, I think what we found was there were actually very, very few companies in India and also in the world that actually had all those tenets in one company. And I think that's what we found very, very unique about Country Delight, that it had most of those things that I mentioned, right from deep markets to deep moats to high margin D2C business. And actually, that's the purpose of this discussion, I think, to go into the detail of a lot of those core building blocks of why it makes it a very, very high quality business. But let me start with a more broader question, the answer to which I know is a fun one. Chakri and Nitin, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you came to start this business and how eventually you landed on this business model?
So, you know, Sanjot, thanks a lot for this. Thanks, sir, for having us here and, you know, talk about our story. It's always a delight to recount how we've gone about doing things. But, you know, just a little bit about us in the sense that we are a direct-to-home consumer brand, and we are loosely based on the concept of a milkman at one end and also based on the concept of whole foods on the other end. So, I mean, it's a combination of these two, and like you said, Sanjot, it's a very, very, very unique business that's been built, and there is one, it's an advantage and a disadvantage that there is not many comparables that we have in what we do. But, you know, when we started out, both me and Nitin thought that, you know, we should do a dividend-based business model, and you have very little money with you. So you think, how do you make, why without having the 0-1 mindset, how do you make and make more money out of the little money that you have? And somehow, you know, coming from a finance background, it seemed like a very good idea to invest in a farm, because, you know, these are non-depreciative assets. Animals are non-depreciative assets, and they multiply and when we thought initially, we started out with like 50 cattle, and we told each other that we'll do like 500 cattle in 2 years. But, and in terms of volume, you know, we were doing like 200 liters a day, and we thought we'll reach 5,000 in 2 years, but it took us 6 years to reach 5,000 liters.
So just to be clear, you actually went and bought a farm, right? A cow.
Yeah.
We bought
some 50 cattle in the first go. In fact, by the time we purchased those 50 cattle, we didn't even have a place to keep them. So once we bought them, we then ran back and, tried to identify a land parcel which we could take on lease, where we could place them. We had a couple of weeks to do that. So, you know, we did all that. And that's how our journey started. Yeah, with 50 cows. Yeah, 50 cows. And then eventually we did buy two bulls because for the herd multiplication, artificial insemination didn't work. So we went back to the same set of guys who sold us those cows to, you know, take some of them back, but rather he sold us a couple of bulls. So we paid him more eventually, and that also didn't work out. But
very interesting. So look, I mean, I think a lot of people think of this as a dairy or a milk company, but you know, we know that's only part of the story. So talk a little bit about, you know, what is the business and how it's evolved over time.
Okay, so see, when we started the business, Sanjot, it started as a milk subscription business, and of course, In India, you will see milk being delivered to a doorstep of a customer on a daily basis. That's pretty much the consumer habit that our business piggybacked on initially. But the idea was never to, you know, look at it prominently as a milk business. The idea was to start building a farm-to-table business, which was built on three broad tenets, which is, number one, the product should be, like, especially if we talk about dairy, the product should be a natural product, which is the product in its original form. The product should be a fresh product. When we say fresh product, means the product should be delivered to the doorstep of the consumer within 24 to 36 hours. And the product should be, rigorously tested, and, all parameters are fully adhered as far as the local compliance standards. So that is how the milk journey got evolved for our business. But as we have built the pipeline of delivery to the doorstep of the consumer, cold chain enabled integrated pipeline, the business is now pivoting to add more fresh produce, fresh products, where we can build on the farm to table philosophy and follow the same principles of natural, fresh, and, you know, unadulterated. So that is how the business is pivoting. So we have launched breads, we have launched free range eggs. The idea is to, you know, ensure that the product is fully developed right from the source to the final packaging, within our controls. All the raw material which is going into the products is fresh and is rigorously tested, so that the end product to the consumer is great. The product should be fully cold chain enabled, so that there is no need of a preservative to be added by the time it reaches to the doorstep of the consumer. And all this then eventually leads to a better tasting product for the customer. So whether it is our milk or it is our breads or it is, consumers eating the egg, they can identify a perceptible difference, whether it is by taste or it is by optics or it is by effervescence, which leads them to believe that the product is a better product in comparison to what they would be naturally having. So that is how the business philosophy has been expanding. Chakri, if you want to add something to it, maybe if I miss something.
Yeah, I mean, see, just adding to that, at the core, there are two very key things that we hold very dear to us, which is that, you know, we are not from the milk background. We don't have any idea on how to do this. We didn't have any idea on how to do this. What we knew, and you know, when you're out of a job, you don't have salary, and you don't know what you're doing. Also, the only thing that you can figure out is, you know, there is a customer trying to tell you what you should do, and that is sort of your guiding light, and that is what really helped us define what we are doing, and that's what makes this business very creative and unique, because it is not that it is one idea that came out as a flashing bulb one. That made this business model. It's an evolution of thought driven by very deep understanding of customers And when you go and try to really get to the bottom of things with your customers, the two key things which we figured out is that people want better for themselves product, but they want it at an affordable price, because you don't want to be a business that caters to a 3%, 5% audience. You want a business that caters to probably 60, 70% audience. And when you are trying to do that, and the need is there for people to really want to believe in a good product for themselves, the two key things which really came out for us is you need to give a better quality products, and people don't believe brand promises which are hollow, which statements which are hollow. People need proof. And when you say proof, it is like in milk. It took us 4-5 years to figure out that tangible taste difference is a proof of a good product for a customer. And that's a very deep concern. And similarly, price was a very big mental barrier. I mean, we could have packed our milk in glass bottles and given to our customers, but that makes it a super premium product, and that doesn't reach to as many audience. And when you're throwing away the packing every day, it makes sense for you to spend 2% of the revenue, 2% of the MRP on the product, and transfer the remaining benefit to the consumer in terms of price. So these were the two key, like, big discoveries for us, which was that, you know, people want better for themselves product, for their family, for their children, and people want it to be affordable. And these two things helped us, you know, define how we do, what we do, and build our own distribution model and reach the customer and all these things.
So Chakri, a lot of that makes sense, except when you said also build distribution to the customer. So everything you said, what customers want, which, by the way, I'm going to be doing a video cast on outside in versus inside out, and you guys are one of the, like Amazon, one of the customer obsessed companies.
Thank you, sir.
A great example, and following what the customer wants. But the customer didn't tell you to come and deliver to their house. They just wanted a great product. So where did thought of direct to home get added to this whole vision is one question. And second, this I genuinely didn't know when we invested. When you started, did you actually think of Milk Plus, or was it Milk and Plus has come later?
Sir, the first question is the idea of reaching a customer directly was not there in the beginning. The idea was that you want to give a good product to the customer at the best possible price. And because distribution was not available, we had to do it on our own. Because finally, you had to reach the customer with a good product, and having a good cold chain is part of that promise, because it's a perishable product. So we didn't have a choice more than anything to reach the customer with the product. But there was one very important thing that was clear for us from the day one. It is to have a captive customer. So when you are catching a customer, you have to catch the customer in the whole. You should not be one of the four choices which keeps coming out in front of the customer. You get that customer and you just keep the customer with you. And that's so even if we would have, let's say, done an outsourced distribution model, having the direct customer connect was sacrosanct, because the customer was telling us what we needed to do. And that was the, like, really most important thing that we held with us as a belief. And so on the non-milk products, again, the idea was from day one, have a captive customer, because having a recurring revenue, no need to advertise while selling. So having a very recurring revenue is very important. So when you are having a captive customer, it was always in the mind to do other products. What was not very clear is whether you need to start developing the expertise, or whether people with expertise will get to you. And what eventually became clear is that, you know, customer has insights on all products, and if you start digging deep enough, you develop very sharp insights on every product, and you can really perfect every product that you deliver to the customer. And having this distribution network gives you a pricing advantage, because if someone is good at doing breads and he is, let's say, going on a general trade format, the customer price that he will have to serve to make money as a business versus a Country Delight having its own captive distribution network will actually translate into better price benefit to the customer, better mass premium propositioning for the customer, and hence a better business overall.
And did you?
I would like to add just one point here, that it is because of this direct to consumer approach from day zero that we were able to really dissect the customer product which has to go to the which the customer really identifies well with. Like, it is actually because we are directly connected with the customer. Customer has a mechanism to directly communicate with us, whether by way of app or by way of communication with our delivery team or by way of contacting at our contact center, that we were able to understand what are the problems that the customer is facing in the industry standard products which is being delivered to them. And that is how we were able to reinvent and, you know, change the product in a manner that it suits to the customer.
You answered my question. I was just going to say that, did you let the customer dictate what else you should sell, or did you figure that out?
Everything was customer, sir. Whether it is milk, whether it is curd, whether it is breads, everything was iterative. Nothing was evolved from day zero. It was not that we had any standardized recipe which we created which worked well with the customer. It was over a period of time, communication with the customer, how the customer perceives the product, how the customer tastes the product, and what is his feedback, which led to all the re-engineering and creating a product which was most suitable for a larger set of the audience. I mean, of course, you know, when it comes to taste, some people will have differentiated taste, but we had to identify what works well with the broader set of audience so that there is mass adaptability.
And we don't give up until we get that right. Because, like, for example, in paneer, it took us a year to perfect our product. 1 year, like, it's a long time. Typically, we develop a product in 2 months. But, you know, the product was just not coming out correct, and the customer was giving us feedback again and again and again. So it is very important to build that perfection out, both in terms of the taste of the product and the quality of the product, as well as on the price that you can give to the customer.
Actually, my next question was going to be partly what you just answered, Chakri. One of the things that struck me initially when we started talking was the product centricity that you guys had, perfecting the product. So maybe just elaborate a little bit more on that. How do you decide which categories? Obviously, you know, customers ask for certain categories and products, but how do you as founders and as a company decide which categories to enter? Like, what are the sort of key checks in your mind? And then what is maybe a little bit about the process of how you get the product right? And, you know, what are the sort of basics of doing so?
So basically, Sanjot, we do it again. Big part of it is driven by the customer. So what the customers, what they ask more frequently is what we try to do. But between that and ease of launch of a product. So let's say when we are doing milk value added product, part of the infrastructure that we do for milk is already there. So that is the second component of, let's say, us deciding whether we want to go with a particular product category. But usually the leeway is like a 3 to 6 months. If I were to let's say decide that we do dahi today, and let's say paneer after 3 months, the decision is only because of the available infrastructure that we have from a business execution point of view. Now the third thing is then understanding the customer. So when we do, let's say now we are like developing a template for it, and we're working across product categories. But when we do it, the way we do it is we first test with 100 customers on what they want with a particular product. Start out with any product that is available. Just give the normal bread and ask what they want, why they want it, what do they like about it, what do they not like about it. And from that initial consumer research bit, you get a lot of inputs. And then once that helps you determine a process around it, on feasibility of implementation of a process around it, and then you start going into multiple layers of iterations. But by the, let's say, third round of testing with customers, with the select set of customers, you get clear on whether it's a viable product to launch, whether it is available, whether the unit economics are possible or not. Like, for example, fruit juices is a category which customers have been requesting us, but we've not been able to crack the unit economics, because what the consumer wants is not something that at least is possible within the basic construct. Any juice that we try to create is a 60 rupee juice, and consumers don't want a 60 rupees juice. Consumer want a 40 to 45 rupee juice, minimum 60 to 80 rupee juice. So that is why we are not going ahead with that category till we get the whole thing right. So it is a bunch of these factors, but primarily consumer driven.
Just, I would like to add one more thing here, Sanjot, that we have built now a supply chain network spanning across 6 states. Across North India and predominantly West India. And that also gives us access to very high quality raw material, whether it is milk, whether it is wheat, whether it is access to oils, whether it is access to free large range poultries. And that has also enabled us to launch products which fit into that whole farm to table. Sanjot, like you already know, as a business, we are fully integrated from a supply side, and not just supply side, from a cold chain standpoint to the customers. We'll just speak about the supply side. So supply side, from the beginning, the business has been built on the philosophy of working with lesser set of stakeholders, where you have more, where you have access to relatively higher quantities, A. B, where you have access to better quality produce, which comes in two or three formats. Number one, if we just talk about milk, for example, typically we work with medium-sized to large-sized farms. You have visited few farms with us in Haryana and in Maharashtra as well. So the idea is to not engage with multiple set of stakeholders, but restricted set of stakeholders where you can work closely with them and build on the supply chain there at the source itself. So I'll just expand a little bit here. When we select any small or medium sized farm, the idea is to select farms who have better hygiene practices, who have better cold chain practices, who have higher adoption to technology when it comes to better quality milking. And all this leads to a better product fundamentally at the source, the minute milk reaches a 4-degree cold chain, which fundamentally leads to no bacterial growth in the product and a very high quality product in comparison to, let's say, how it works with any other industry players. B, the product is rigorously tested at the source there itself. Now, because you have built materiality at the source and because you're working with medium-sized farms, you're able to invest into better quality testing, better quality cold chain infrastructure at restricted locations, which is giving you access to larger quantities in comparison to how a typical cooperative network will operate. Third thing which we would like to add is that over the years, we have also started working with a lot of IoT integration. So we are sitting today, we are getting all real-time updates of the temperature of the milk. We are getting all real-time updates on the bacterial growth of the product, which we are receiving. All quality parameters, all the payment parameters. So IoT also has evolved over the last 2 years. Which is leading to a better quality, product, and more importantly, a more transparent product from the source. So this is now becoming more scalable. So we are today able to identify what is the source which we are procuring right in Maharashtra, even in Kolhapur where we are having our procurement, or in Andhra, which is 1,000 kilometers away, predominantly because of access to good quality IoT systems as well.
Yeah. And the one thing that I'll add from my experience with you guys is also how not just customer centric you are, but how much the farmer loves you as well. I remember, you remember this, Chakri, when I visited, I think the guy insisted that we sit down and have lassi before we left.
And yeah.
Upset. It was very genuine because some of the specific things that you mentioned, the payment terms, the payment cycles, I think the help that you give to these progressive farmers on how to rear cows and work with their produce. And that really helps with the word of mouth in the farmer community as well. Right? You to the best inputs.
One or two things which actually add a little more value is because we are a premium brand, we pay our farmers a little better, which creates a lot of sustainability in the engagement, and also we are a direct subscription business. Our demand is highly predictable. So from a farmer point of view, the predictability is very, very high. And
yes,
like Nitin was saying, technology is a very big part of scaling with good quality products, because today, like the stuff we are doing, no one is even thinking about it. Like the kind of things which we are talking about, being able to monitor the entire business is sitting here, and that's the kind of stuff which is possible and with a very lean investment mechanism. It is not going to cost you that much. And that's why the ROC numbers come out the way they are. But yeah.
Actually, you know, this is not scripted, I promise you, but it's another great segue into my next question, which is, which, you know, as an investor, one of the things that we obviously, you know, obsess over is return on capital as well as growth. And I think traditionally the argument against consumer brands and D2C brands has been that, you know, they're lower growth, they are restricted by your general trade and modern trade routes, as and even in modern days restricted by the growth rates of e-com marketplaces, right? If Flipkart grows at 30%, it's very hard to outgrow Flipkart or Amazon in that year. But I think one of the things you've cracked is that you've obviously grown very, very over the last several years, and you've done so in a very capital efficient manner, which is again unheard of in consumer internet companies. So maybe spend a little bit of time talking about both those aspects and how you've kind of sort of managed that.
See, at the core, we are a subscription-based business. And what the subscription business offers you is a highly recurring revenue. Our 24-month-old customers give us the same revenue today as they were giving on the day one as a cohort. And so when you have one linearity that, you know, if you add a bunch of customers and they give the same revenue over time, and then you are adding new customers, the growth becomes highly exponential. That is point number one of why we are able to grow at the pace we are growing. It is not that we are being spending a lot in terms of marketing dollar or anything like that. It's just the nature and the power of the business model that we have, which is the entire subscription-based pattern. And the second thing is that we always believed in creating a fundamentally sustainable business. So it is again not that, you know, we are making a lot of money from our customers. It is just that the unit economics are just right enough for us to be efficient as a business. And the third thing is we use tech a lot. Like, this business wouldn't have been possible 15 years back. If there was no mobile revolution, the whole tech ecosystem is not the way it is today. Today, we deliver to more than 3 million customers a month. And that's not something that was possible 15 years back. And because we use tech, we are able to monitor everything real time. We are able to save a lot of money in terms of capital investment by being nimble with technology. And because of the power of the subscription nature of our business, we are able to sort of have this 98% month-on-month retention, 100% revenue retention over time, and, you know, efficient ROC and less investment in the business.
On growth, I'll just like to add, Sanjay, that, you know, even at the levels that we are operating at, we are just skimming the surface. Like, even if you just talk about, just for example, liquid milk or dairy as a category, you know, companies like Amul and Mother Dairy handle upwards of 40 million liters of milk daily, you know, and what are we trying to do? We are trying to create a differentiated premium audience, or service a differentiated premium audience with a differentiated product, of course, out of the larger set of audience. So, you know, and if you look at and we are operating in key metros where the consumption is very high, per capita consumption is very high, densities are fairly sustainable. So the market where we are operating, we are not even 1%, you know, of the current consumption trends. And we are trying to build a premium audience, or we are trying to build a premium produce which can cater to a far larger set of audience than what we are catering right now. So that's why we feel that the business not only should grow, like, of course, historically business has grown to 2 to 3 times annually. We feel that this is a growth rate which is sustainable for the next quite a few years as well, because the market size itself is so large. And the consumer capacity to consume within metros itself is so large that, you know, there's enough market for us to skim here.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll add my 2 cents since, you know, it's a topic close to my heart as well. So on the ROCE specifically, the return on capital, I think what's unique about our business is, like both of you mentioned, I think the margin profile is very, very unique, right? A, the cross-sell makes our gross margin much, much higher. The price premium and the cross-sell makes the gross margin much higher. Then owning the customer makes the return on CAC much higher than any other business, right? So your LTV CAC of more than 5-6x is unheard of. And then third, I think the delivery model gives us best-in-class delivery costs, right? Without giving away too many of the numbers, less than 12, 15 cents per delivery is unheard of the world over. So P&L, the net margin is just far higher than any business can achieve in such a scale. And at the same time, the capital employed is so little, like we have negative working capital and such high return on the CapEx that your return, effective return on capital ends up becoming extremely high over time.
Yes. I'd like to add here that, you know, if you take typical dairy businesses, what they do is when they procure milk, they want to use every ounce of that milk and they go about setting the whole full chain integration, making cheese, making milk powder, making everything possible. But what that results is actually poor utilization of capital. What we do is we have the same thinking at a consumer level. So when you are giving a good product to the customer, you have taken all the pains to figure everything out. Now you are adding dimensions to it and adding linearity to build the whole exponentiality in the business.
Absolutely. So I think the discussion would be incomplete without talking a little bit about the current scenario. You know, obviously we've gone through as a global society through a lot of pain in the last couple of months. So talk a little bit about, you know, how you've handled the whole COVID phenomenon and how you've kind of come out of it.
Okay. So Sanjot, one thing which has worked to our advantage, and it's not that it's helped us now, but traditionally the business is built like that, is that we are fully owning the supply chain, like we discussed before. So it's not that we haven't faced problems when the whole COVID crisis happened, because there's a lot of uncertainty in the market or with the news when the whole news started percolating down the value chain. But because we were able to individually dissect the challenges all our supply chain, and because we were fully owning the supply chain, we were not dependent on anybody else to, you know, for a solution to ensure that there is no business disruption. So whether it was just a movement of our raw milk or raw produce during the from our distribution centers to our customer locations, or it was operating our production facilities with full containment practices. Everything was handled individually, and everything was, wherever we were facing problems, we were working very closely with the local district administration and trying to resolve. Like, for example, in Bombay, we have gone up to the Bombay Commissioner of Police to receive letters from them so that, you know, there is no impact at the delivery boy level. In sourcing locations which were under containment zone, we have gone to the local administration and requested them that given the essential nature of business, we should not be impacted. So luckily, because everything was in our control, the whole supply chain is in our control, we were able to handle each problem to ensure that there was no supply disruption. We had very, very marginal supply disruption, maybe, you know, like hardly 2-3% in the first 2-3 days, which was predominantly because of the panic. But then we have been doing, as a business, we are very proud that we are doing 100% fill rate. We have not missed any orders. We have added new customers during this whole crisis, and which has resulted, of course, positively for the business. The other thing which we have done is we have tried to build backups across all our operating zones. So whether it's a production facility, we have quickly gone and tied up with more facilities who could work with us on a contract manufacturing basis. Whether it's our distribution centers, we have reduced the risk of densities of delivery boys, or too many delivery boys coming and reporting at the same time. We have split the centers, we have split the timing so that at any point of time, not more than 15 to 20 people are available and are interacting with the team. Even if there's a potential risk of COVID within one of our setups, it's minimally spread and it's maximally contained. So that is something which we have done. Something extra which we have done is we have ensured that our core team the movement of our core team is restricted. We have provided lodging to them. We have provided food to them. They are kept very comfortable so that they don't have to go out and interact with other people for their basic requirements. So that there is any potential risk of containment or contamination is again further mitigated by that.
What we have done, sir, is that it comes from the culture of consumer obsession more than anything, because we have never wanted to miss a delivery as a business, and that's ingrained in our business over the last many years. And that builds a sort of big coherence in the team to make it happen. and everyone really wants to just do their job and make this happen. And it is the job of us to sort of, you know, address their problems. And some of the problems, what most of the things which Nitin mentioned is about understanding what are the potential risks. Everyone wants to do their job. They want to serve the customer. And you have to figure out how to help them. So if it's a delivery guy getting caught at the police station, you have to address his concern, like getting him released in the next 3-4 hours, talking to him personally, gaining the confidence of that person. And that sort of has a big ripple effect within the entire business. And when you see that, you know, founders are working 18 hours a day, you know, on the worst day of the lockdown to just make things happen, calling you at 3 a.m. in the morning, 2 a.m. in the morning, figuring, asking you and solving your problem at that moment as an individual, then the whole thing moves in a very, very positive direction. I think that was the biggest momentum creator in the first couple of days more than anything. So it was coupled with culture of, you know, not wanting to miss the delivery from a consumer point of view, and the desire of the team to move towards it. And the second biggest thing is again the power of the business model. We are a full stack business model. We have control over the entire value chain. So like on the first days of the lockdown, when even Amul, Mother Dairy, everyone's business was not doing well, we were able to take all the milk from our farmers fully. That built so much confidence with all the stakeholders across the system also.
Additionally, was we maintained constant communication with our customers. Every day, a customer would get a message that tomorrow your milk delivery will happen. And that builds a lot of assurance, like, you know, from a customer standpoint. And whenever we would see that we were sending those messages, we would see, you know, customers trying to order even more at that point of time. Because, you know, the customer realized that they could rely on us for their daily requirements. I think that really worked. And now, like, we spoke on the supply chain, we spoke on the operational, you know, side of the impact and how we are trying to address it. From the customer side, like we said, number one, we mentioned, we highlighted to our customers daily that, you know, they don't have to worry about the milk and or their products, and all the products will be delivered. That assurance was given. Second, we built more transparency for the customers. So today, a customer gets a message which highlights the temperature of the delivery boy, which gives the assurance to the customer that proper sanitization measures have been taken, you know, for the person who has delivered to you. That temperature of the delivery boy is even communicated to the customer. You know, so customer believe finds a lot of assurance and finds it builds a lot of brand loyalty, predominantly because you're trying to be as transparent with the customer as possible.
I mean, like, so in, from a consumer point of view, like, there were times that we used to tell that, you know, you'll get your milk at 2 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
And customers appreciated it, that, you know, at least these guys are telling that, you know, something will come or something will not come. If it comes, it will come. And then you're apologizing that, you know, sorry for the inconvenience, but this is the best we can do. And some of the measures which Nitin is saying, like, most people have implemented now, but we were the first ones to do it. So we are ahead of the curve, whether it's integrating with the Arogya Setu app or whether it's what we are doing now. We are building some very solid video analytics on monitoring COVID and monitoring people, monitoring distribution, if, distribution centers, precautionary measures. So we are, one of the strengths is that, you know, we are ahead of the curve, and we don't mind sharing because it's a time where we all learn by sharing. But that is one of the strengths that we have as a business.
Yeah.
So I only have one last question, guys. More open-ended one. You know, if you were to think today, 2-3 years out, what's your vision? What excites you the most about the business?
We have built this amazing. We've had the privilege of building this amazing business model, which was purely taught to us by customers and supported by partners like you guys. So and at least today we are at a stage where we figured out that how do you, there are many businesses, there are many platforms today, there are many marketplaces today, but and you people get offered a wide variety of choice of products. But as a business, if you take the pain of understanding what the consumer wants beyond what are the obvious choices in the market, and if you take the pain of like going to the depth of solving a customer's problem, there is a huge opportunity that you can create. And we are all about creating many such products which we can give to our customers. And because we own the distribution network, we can do it at a beautiful price from a consumer point of view and be sustainable as a business also. So it's a huge opportunity that we have, which is being given to us by timing, by our customers and by our efforts to see this pan out. And as a first step, what we see is like, we see ourselves as a business with a 500,000 customers spending $100 a month with Country Delight.
Yeah.
We see ourselves in the next couple of years.
Today we are just capturing 20 to 30% of the fresh produce basket for the customer. And fresh produce can be in various formats in various products. And the idea is to add on to those products where there is a repeat purchase place, so which builds beautifully to our subscription, which builds into our already existing established cold chain, because that leads to a better quality product ultimately. And thirdly, where we have access at the source itself, which again fundamentally leads to a better product when it is created. So we are like Chakradar said, right now we are at 30% of our customer basket, and we should ideally target $100 ARPU for our customers with a high repeat purchase. We don't want to be in a laundry list of products. We want to have a restricted set of products, but those products which are high margin, which builds on to our ROCE, which builds on to better delivery efficiency. And at the same point of time, within the whole tenets of product being perceptibly different from what the customer is already having. So it's just started, Sanjot. It's a long journey, and you guys have seen it for quite some time. And there are a lot of thoughts of what new we can do, where all we can add. As long as it builds into the whole, it stays to the whole brand promise of an honest and a great product for the customer. I mean, we will keep launching more products and add it to the basket.
Excellent. Thank you again, guys.
Sanjot, if I may, I have been listening and noting down some learnings. Can I summarize? I have a top 10 list.
Yes, please. Yeah.
Okay. So first, it's almost like a recipe to see how this was built up over a period of time. Nitin said, or Chakri said, animals are not non-depreciating assets. I've never thought of them like that because they multiply. But I think for founders, it's important to see that reveals a commercial mindset even when you guys started, and kind of flows through the rest of your business. Then when you are out of a, these are all quotable quotes, by the way, guys, in my view. Chakri said, when you're out of a job, customer tells you what to do. I think this customer obsession and being outside in and following the customer. Then you guys spoke about, I think, Nitin, captive customer and surrounding them with a wallet share, which I think is a great learning. A lot of times I find businesses start capture a customer and then they start looking for product lines for other customers. Figure out more product lines, more monetization for the same customer if you've got something going. So I thought that was amazing, but it's also the fact that the customer was dictating that. And again, I don't think I've ever heard more of a customer obsession coming out than today. Chakri, you said, we don't give up until we get the product right. Amazing. I think this point, Sanjot, you made, that farmers also love them, I think that's amazing. I have found rarely in two-sided marketplaces, if you can call this one, because you are in some ways, that both sides love the company, right? It's generally one or the other. One is a marginally more pissed off. So I thought that's amazing. And that again goes to why you have such a great business. Coming to the financials, subscription business gives great ROCE, great point, deep market, Nitin, which gives growth. So you got both going. And from my perspective, and Sanjot and I talk about it, this is, and in consumer, it's a little bit like you've seen in fintech and NBFC. 3x for 2 years is better than 10x in 1 year, in my view, because the former is more capital efficient, more repeatable, more scalable, and it compounds with time. The 10x in 1 year can actually go down. So again, very interesting. Hustle in the crisis, backup plans, changing the delivery force, so being ahead of the curve, like you said, video analytics, all the things, Nitin, you said. This is very important. You guys hustled very early and you didn't miss a single delivery. I think that's amazing. Leadership lesson. Everybody wants to do the right thing. Founder's job is to enable it. Amazing leadership. The fact that if a delivery boy is stuck in a police station, you guys led by example, got them out, took care of the family, spoke to them. Awesome leadership lesson. Over-communicate in a crisis. Great lesson. Speaking to customers, communicating to them. 10th, I didn't have, so I just said Matrix is a great investor. Matrix is a great investor. I'm joking. But I actually think this is a masterclass. And thank you, Sanjot, and thank you guys for doing this.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, sir. And Matrix is an awesome investor.
Yeah. Yes.
Sanjot, do you have any closing thoughts?
No, nothing. I think I just wanted to thank these guys. I think not just for today, but you know, for all those lessons that you summarized, Avnish, I've seen them in real life over the last few years. So it's been a real pleasure working with you guys and a privilege to learn from you as well. And hopefully, you know, it continues for a long time and we see a lot more success. So thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, sir. Thanks, Sanjot.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you for tuning in. And you can find the transcribed version of this podcast on matrixpartners.in. You can also follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn for more updates.